Hello, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Matt and Reese.
And this is Core Intuition. Run to the Apple Store. This week's show is sponsored by Linode. Well, Manton, you are on a weird setup. You were recording into an iOS device, and this week I am on a weird setup, recording into a 2016 MacBook Pro without the benefit of my USB hub, which takes away all of the... You know, I have one USB to USB-C adapter, and at home, so just to fill folks in, I'm on the road here. I'm recording live in New York City, and Manton is at home in Austin. I just threw all my stuff in the bag, and I thought, ha-ha, I'm no dummy. I have the USB-C to USB adapter. And then I get here, and I'm plugging everything in, and I realize, oh, this is kind of like my first example of actually being a little bit annoyed by the dongles, because I'm pretty easygoing about it. Actually, the other time I'm annoyed with it is, I only have the one adapter, so I leave the adapter in my office. And when I'm using my MacBook around the house, if I ever want to plug a USB thing in, I'm just kind of annoyed. But it's not a big deal. Here we are, though, on the road, and I've got one adapter and two devices, because I didn't think it through. I didn't think through that I usually plug my my iPhone in to tether, and of course the USB microphone needs to be plugged in too. So I'm getting set up to talk to you, and I'm like, oh no, the world is coming to an end. Of course, we're chatting with each other. The world did not come to an end, partly because I guess I embraced Apple's wireless vision of the future and turned on Wi-Fi, personal hotspot. And here we go. Everything's fine. It's fine, Manton. It was a brief panic. I thought, oh no, I'm going to have to go. I had a couple scenarios run through my mind. I was going to have to go run to the Apple Store, which luckily there's one within like 10-minute walk of here. Get another adapter, come back, then we'll record. And the other one was, oh, I'm just going to have a phone call with Manton on my phone, and my Mac will not be connected to the internet. Anyway, all of that just to say, hey, Manton, how's it going?
Good. Yeah, the dongles and the adapters, it's always a temporary annoyance, but long term, everything's going to be fine. Everything but USB-C. I tend not to worry about that too much, but it does surprise, you know, when you run into that. I thought I'd be recording on iOS again this week, so I sent my MacBook into the Apple Store to get fixed, and they actually fixed it in the store, so I had a feeling it would be quicker than the estimated 3 or 5 days, and it was only like 24, 48 hours.
Oh, that's good.
But I wanted to plan for being 5 days without my MacBook, and so I decided to use my iPad Pro exclusively during that time. You know, I have iOS 11 on it, which I love, and I'm like, you know, I'm going to really use it. I'm going to use the iPad, and turns out I only needed to use it for 1 day, and half of that was on the weekend. But just in case, I did buy a new microphone for my iOS devices, a Lightning microphone. The old one I had was like $10 cheap, like going out of business sale, old model, and I decided, yeah, I'm going to invest in a better microphone because I do want to do more recording from iOS. And that's still compelling to me. And I think with this new mic, actually, I may do more and more recording on iOS, even for this podcast, because it's just smaller and more convenient than, I don't know. You got the big microphone and the USB cable and the stand. And like, I don't know. I like to downsize. So, but right now, back to the usual setup and back to my fixed MacBook Pro. I told you, I was sure it wasn't the fan. It wasn't fan noise. I was right about that, but it was some part related to the fan that was rattling. So they did replace that, and they also replaced my entire MacBook screen. I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. I don't know if they broke it while they were fixing everything, but they said in the message they left me, oh, by the way, something was loose or coming apart on your screen, so we replaced it. And when they replace a screen, this is obvious, I guess, but I didn't realize it, they replaced that entire part of the MacBook, right? Mm-hmm. The whole thing.
Oh, so you lose any stickers and stuff?
I lost stickers. Yeah, like the first thing I go to the Apple Store and they hand me your new MacBook. I'm like, where are my stickers?
Where are my stickers? They don't give you like the old sticker laden screen as a souvenir.
She was like, oh, if you really want them, I can go in the back and see if the stickers are still there and we can peel them off. I'm like, yeah, that's not going to work. They're not going to, like, forget it. So I was a little bummed, but it was a completely, it wasn't a serious thing to be bummed about.
No, but it's a great example of how Apple's kind of like humanity angle with the whole, like, you know, they even did an ad about stickers. That's at odds with their mm-hmm. just like casual treatment of hardware that needs to be repaired. It's like, well, you didn't even think your screen was broken, but it was. Trust us.
I'm a little surprised they didn't notice. I mean, I only had two stickers on there. I had a micro.blog sticker and I had an indie webcam sticker. And I'm kind of bummed about that one because I don't have an extra one. I have plenty of micro.blog yeah. stickers. And I was a little surprised that they didn't notice it, make a note, and tell me, like, oh, I'm really sorry, you know, your stickers, or here are the stickers we salvaged from, you know, they're right. not sticky anymore. I don't know. It's just, here's your new computer, and like, mm-hmm. We didn't notice the stickers. It's completely oblivious to the stickers.
Now, when I got my MacBook Pro repaired recently, I also had the screen replaced, and it turned out to be lucky because I was kind of like able to sneak in a trip to the Austin Repair Depot for my other problem, which was, you know, the sudden shutdowns. I was able to sneak that in as like a free ride with the screen. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you had the same screen problem as I did. It's called screen delamination. Does that ring a bell?
So I didn't actually ask them specifically because the person handing me the computer, I don't think, knew yeah. everything without checking the notes. But in the message they left me, they didn't use that term, but the way they... That sounds right. That sounds like it could be it. Yeah.
So here's what it is, folks. And this is the kind of thing, like, you might, if you're like me, not notice it, or you might think it's just like your filthy lifestyle leading to a buildup of crud and debris on your screen. But if you look at your screen in the black, especially particularly in the black edges, but also on the screen, you know, anywhere, and you see like little like geographic features, almost like little like, they almost look like water stains almost. And I just assumed it was like, oh, I don't wipe my screen clean enough. And there's like just some buildup of crud. And I like try to wipe it with a cleaning, you know, pad. And it seemed like, well, is this kind of coming up? Or I don't know. Anyway, it turns out this is like a widespread problem with a certain vintage of MacBook Pro. Mine was 2013, I think, maybe 2014. And it's one of these things where if you take it to the Apple store and they see that, they're just like, oh, yeah, that's busted. We need to replace that.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't notice any problem. Like, there yep. was nothing about my computer and the screen that I said, this is a problem. So, but yeah, they obviously have an eye for it. Related to, you know, sneaking in the repair, like, I was glad. And maybe the reason they didn't even check with me is that it was covered and a free repair. So I had AppleCare on this right. computer, and I never get AppleCare. Like, never, never, never get it. And I got it on this one. And I'm not exactly... I think I was just, you know, I was spending a little more on the MacBook than I wanted to. It was right when I had quit my job. And this is going to be the computer that, like, got me to, like, my independent right. business to, like, work. And so that was 2 years ago. And I said, you know what? I'm going to get AppleCare. I don't want any surprises that are going to ruin everything. So I'm glad I did. Like, the total repairs, I think, were $500 or $600 if I had paid for them. Of course, it was free and covered. So... I'm glad I did, but I never get AppleCare. I think I'm still going to never get AppleCare for iOS devices. But going forward, I think I'll continue to get it now for MacBooks because proven that it makes sense. With iOS devices, like, the most common thing is dropping and cracking the screen anyway, which is a whole separate issue. And so I feel like maybe it's not as important.
Didn't I read recently that they're like starting to cover... I know they changed the coverage for AppleCare for iOS, and I think one of the things is maybe not just iOS, maybe across the board, but I think they're now covering for water damage, which is, I mean, that makes a lot of sense on iOS, where it's been rumored for a while now that they're effectively waterproof.
Right.
But I think on MacBooks as well, they're now covering...
I think that water damage on MacBooks has to be fairly rare. I have had water spilled on MacBooks in years past and, you know, shut it down immediately, turn it upside down, dry it. Like, usually it's fine. There was actually my wife's MacBook, old MacBook, like the plastic, kind of like the right near the transition from iBooks. I think it was coffee, though, that killed it. But anyway, it seems fairly rare. I like that they covered that, if that's true. And they have AppleCare Plus, too, which I think helps you more on screen repair on iOS. I haven't kept track of it.
Right. But, well, so I'm like you. I'm like the old Manton. I never get AppleCare. Mm-hmm. I just rely upon random free rides to Austin on covered screen damage. I think that there's still an argument for you not to get it, because how much did you pay for it? Like $200 or $300?
I think I so I th- my memory was that the this MacBook, and it was mid 2014 Retina 13-inch. My memory was it was about $2,000, and yeah, I paid $200 to $300 for AppleCare. And at that point, I'm paying $2,000 already. It didn't feel like a stretch to pay a little more. And also, I think maybe it's easier to justify if you buy fewer computers, the chances of them all breaking. If you buy a lot of iOS devices, which people do, like I have multiple iPads, we're always buying iPhones, I think it makes less sense to buy AppleCare for all of them, because that's a huge extra cost when chances are only one is going to have a problem. Does that make sense? If I just have one computer and it's for my business and I rely on it, I can justify that cost with, I don't know, there's something about iOS devices. We buy them so often, the chances of there being catastrophic damage that would cost hundreds of dollars to repair, it just doesn't really add up. The math doesn't really add up to me, especially if you buy AppleCare for every device. We all have iPhones, iPhones in the family plus older iPads. It doesn't make sense to spend $1,000-$1,500 total on AppleCare for all those devices. Math doesn't work for me on that.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, you know, it definitely feels good when you happen to have the AppleCare and then it comes through like this. But since you paid $200 or $300 for it and it saved you $500, it's like it only really saved you $200, right? And so then, I don't know. I guess I could see, like, I'll be curious to see now if you do stick with paying for AppleCare. When is the next time that you benefit from AppleCare? And we'll have to just wait and see, I guess. Yeah. But
no, I think that's it. I don't expect there to be any other problems before AppleCare runs out. The other thing, though, is you say it saved me a couple hundred dollars. It almost saved me $3,000, because I was very close to buying a new Mac as part of this. I didn't want to buy a new MacBook Pro yet. I considered it because I'd be without my Mac for a few days. I didn't want to dust off an old Mac Pro that's lying around, or use the kid's iMac or my wife's computer. You know, I almost bought a new 15-inch MacBook Pro just because it's a great time to buy one, and then I would have a Mac. And I'm so glad I didn't. Obviously, that would have been a waste of a $3,000, because my computer is perfectly fine.
Oh man, you're just describing my life to me right now.
I'm sorry. But you know, it's like, you know, your mileage may vary. For me, I feel like I saved $3,000. I honestly did, because I was very close. I used them in the store more. I'm like, okay, I could get used to this keyboard. I can justify getting a slightly bigger screen. I've been kind of wanting a bigger screen, get a terabyte of, you know, disk, like more RAM. Like, it would be a really, really nice upgrade for my computer. But I didn't have to make that choice, and I'm glad I didn't, because I can wait a year. This computer is, I expected this MacBook Pro to last 3 years, and I'm not at 3 years yet, so yeah. I'm sticking with it.
Well, I think people who are really dedicated to, like, I think the people who really gamed the system are the people who buy MacBooks, don't get AppleCare, and then sell them after 2 years. You know, because, like, you get, like, pretty good resale value, and then you get that you're always on the newest MacBook, and your chances of something going wrong within 2 years is pretty low.
Yeah.
And then at that point, it's like, well, if you're selling it every 2 years, then you never even had, like, you were only ever exposed for 1 year to warranty issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think if I could, I would like to get into that. But I have a lot of inertia about selling computers. I'm not good at it. Like, I think Marco Arment is, like, good at this. Like, he's always talking about selling something. Mm-hmm. I'm like, how do you move so much stuff? But for me, it's like, oh yeah, that would take me, like, buying a new MacBook and then copying my files over and then clearing the old MacBook. And it doesn't sound that I just did it with my upgrade and and passing my computer down to my kids. But so like I could, you know, just totally ruin their world right now and just sell that old one.
No, it's a hassle to move.
Yeah.
Even though I have literally everything on Dropbox and I could be up and running, like syncing really quickly. It's a hassle. And also I can't sell my old computers. They have to be passed down to my kids. Cause like all my kids are kind of due for an upgrade. You know, my son has a really old MacBook, you know, my daughters are kind of aging MacBook Airs or whatever they, you know, it's just, yeah, I couldn't sell it. I'd have to pass it down.
Right. But if you got into the habit of doing it every 2 years, you might be able to. Mm-hmm. Or at least, you know, I don't know. Well, anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, that's not for me, but I do have a fixed computer. Feels like it's almost a new computer. And I wish they had put a bigger hard drive in while they were at it, but no.
You wish they'd found something wrong with your hard drive and then removed all your stickers from your hard drive without asking? Yeah. Okay, our thanks this week to our sponsor, Linode. If you need a Linux box to host a website, a private Git repository, or maybe to serve as the back end for your latest iOS app, consider Linode Cloud Hosting. Linode has been doing infrastructure as a service since 2003. They give their customers free upgrades, and they have 8 global data centers equipped with industry-leading data center-grade SSDs. Now, you might already have a hosting plan. You might be happy with your hosting plan. You might think you're happy with your hosting plan. So you need to ask yourself why Linode might be the right choice for you. Well, you get root access, so you have full control of your VMs, your containers, everything. They also give you clear, precise hourly billing with a monthly pricing cap. They have add-ons for load balancing, system metrics, and backups, and they give their customers 24/7, 365 days a year customer support. To cap that all off, they're also offering our listeners a promo code. Use the code CoreInt2017, that's CoreInt2017, and you'll get a $20 credit towards your new Linode account. At the lowest entry-level hosting schedule, that's equivalent to 4 free months at $5 a month. So really worth checking out. Whatever you have now, chances are Linode offers something that's better, more reliable, faster. You get more control. So go to linode.com/coreint to learn more. Thanks to Linode for sponsoring the show.
Yeah, it's great to have Linode as a sponsor. Of course, I use them for all my web apps and continue to kind of ramp that stuff up for micro.blog, which is hosted there. And the nice thing about it, as he said, it's like, it's just a Linux box. Like, it's simple. It's nothing weird and proprietary where you can't access it from, you know, different software and computers. It's all totally standard stuff. So when I was on my iPad only kind of experiment for a couple of days, I can still SSH in there. You know, I was using Coda and Panax Prompt and, you know, web browser and different things. I can still do everything I need to do, even from the iPad. It's just access to Linux instances that you can customize, you can scale up or down depending on how much, you know, memory and bandwidth and everything you need. Really good service, really good folks. I really like the way they have their business. Simple, good prices. Check it out if you need a server for anything. And again, that's leno.com/coreint.
Well, Manton, Apple, the famously secretive Apple, sometimes just throws a lob ball to the journalists because, an example of that recently was Tim Cook in an interview with Bloomberg confirmed the company is working on an Apple car. And this has been like one of these things where it's like, okay, it's an open secret for years now, I guess. It's been like, okay, come on, we saw that Apple like filed for a self-driving car permit in California. Now, why would you do that if you're not working on a car? And then like people at Apple be like, well, cars are very interesting. And, you know, we are interested in the idea of cars existing. And then, but in this interview, Tim Cook just came out and said it. He said like there is a car project, the way this TechCrunch article describes it, says that it would, that there's a combination of self-driving cars, electric vehicles, and ride sharing. These are all components of the Apple Car project. I mean, just like it would have been enough if they just came out and said, yes, it's true, we're working on an electric vehicle, or yes, it's true, we're working on self-driving cars. You know, that self-driving permit was legit. But they're saying, you know, also ride sharing, like they're just like, they're kind of giving, like, they're like breaking the piñata at the at the like Apple car speculation party, right? And this is like so contrary. The ride sharing thing is interesting, especially with their investment in that
right
big Chinese ride sharing company, which unfortunately I'm not thinking of the name of right now.
Didi,
yeah, that's yeah.
Is that Chinese or Indian? I can't remember now.
I think it was China.
Okay,
but hey, facts are malleable
fake
things.
Fake news. Right, but the point is, you know, what do we take away from this? And I actually think, like, the way you've just, like, paraphrased it is not actually the impression I got. Because, like, they weren't, or Tim Cook wasn't very specific. He was, like you said, he was like this and this and this. And my first thought was that there is no car project, actually. What there is investment and research. It's like it's not a pure research thing, but there's this project or set of projects underway that are related to all this, but there is no product yet.
Right.
This is they're trying things, they're experimenting, and they want to be public about this now, interestingly, because it kind of fits in some of this narrative they had at WWDC about AI and probably machine learning and everything else. And like, yeah, my first thought was they want more people on this. They want people that are excited about AI. They want to even hire more people to work with this team and figure out where it leads. They want to be ahead of these problems. They want to be working and thinking about this stuff. But there is no product. There is no car that is being worked on and that will ship in a year or two or three or four years. It's more research. It's almost like old Apple that had research groups and people tinkering and experimenting with things. And some of them led to products and some of them didn't.
It's funny because I can easily see either extreme of this being true. What you describe, which is, haha, there's not really a car and it's just, we're focusing on technology and we're going to be like the patent holders of amazing technology that everybody else is going to want to use. And that's like one, that's the extreme, like no, there's no product. And then the other extreme would be that this is like when Steve Jobs famously said, nobody wants to watch video on an iPod.
Right.
And then it was like, haha, here's our video iPod, but it's interesting. I think when I think about those extremes, I don't picture a world in which Apple just owns patents and licenses them to people, right? I don't think you do either.
Oh, it's like, no, absolutely not.
So yeah. So that it's that very far extreme where it's just like, okay, this is all pure research. It'll go into making things that end up being licensed to other people. That's not the case.
Mm-mm. No, so I don't believe that.
I'm not saying you did. I'm just painting this picture here. So if it's not like the other extreme where it's like, haha, here's the car we said that we were not making, then it's hard to imagine why focus on cars in particular if you're not going to make a car. Because it's like, well, what are you going to make? Like that. And so he kind of tries to generalize it and says, we're focusing on autonomous systems. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, there's lots of ways to focus on autonomous systems that don't require getting a self-driving car permit in California. You know, like you can make robots that walk around Apple yeah. Park and serve coffee or whatever, right?
It's
so it's just kind of interesting that, like, unless it's, you know, I guess it's possible that the chaos of engaging with the public highways is like, it's possible that maybe that just like turns out to be the absolute like best trial by fire, you know, playground for testing autonomous systems of any kind. I don't know, but it seems like to me they're making a car because I read somewhere else that maybe they're just making some kind of like super like Apple, like the equivalent of like an Apple CPU for cars, right? Like an Apple, like the brain of cars, then like any of a million different brands could just license. I get, again, it's the licensing thing, but I guess if it's more like, you know, I guess if it's more like the way that AirPlay or CarPlay can be in any car,
right?
If it's back to this idea of like, okay, well, instead of CarPlay, how about you just have a computer in your hunk of metal that happens to be from Apple, and not only is it CarPlay, but it also actually drives the car. That's interesting, yeah. But again, I think we had this sort of similar conversation maybe even a year ago or more.
We did.
And it came down to me to Apple wouldn't give up any component of that vertical market, of that, like, it wouldn't give up any component of the whole product of a car driving experience. So I had trouble, like, imagining that. It's like, if Apple's going to put all this work into making making this experience good, and making something autonomous, making something, maybe making a ride-sharing vehicle, maybe making a electric car, maybe making a self-driving car, I just don't see them focusing on something little, some like little component that drops into a Hyundai. You know, like, I don't see that. You know, Apple can prove me wrong. Apple could be, this could be a major change in the way Apple would move forward. But I just see, like, it would be like if Apple made, you know, the iOS insides, and then allowed arbitrary companies to put them in whatever form factor they wanted. And I just don't see that. It's like, yeah, we're focusing on touch capacitive screens, but that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to be making our own touch capacitive screen based devices.
Yeah, you know? I mean, this is, again, we've touched on a lot of this in the past, and it comes down to, do we think Apple can improve enough of the car experience to need to make a car? And my argument is, there are some parts of a car they cannot improve. Mm-hmm. There's some parts of a car, like the steering wheel and the, I was going to say gas pedal, but of course it's electric. There's some parts of a car that cannot be improved. There can be slight improvements, but, like, this is just how a car works. It has to work this way, because roads exist and, like, traffic lights exist. And in the short term, 5 years, I do not see them making a car. But I can see them making something that is like the next generation of CarPlay, where it's really more integrated into the car, and it has Siri, and it has it's software. Like, Apple, their strength is software. I mean, yes, hardware, it's great. But, like, if you look at the beginning of the company to now, like, software is super important to the company, and that's where they can really differentiate themselves. If they could figure out a way to focus on the software and the user experience around a car without making a car, that's what they should do. I will be shocked still if they actually have a car with an Apple logo on it. I do not see that happening. And I think that Tim's quote points to, they are not sure what to do yet. You know, he could be just making stuff up, but, I mean, he says, you know, we'll see where it takes us. We'll see. We're doing all this research. We're experimenting. Yes, we're playing around with cars that drive themselves or whatever, but, like, I don't think Apple knows exactly where this is headed. They just know they want to do something. And so they're doing things, and they have a team. There's no product.
It's interesting. I like your line of thinking, but you come across so confidently when you talk about it. There's no way to improve a car. And I just think, and I feel like, I'm sorry, listeners, I'm sure we're repeating again some things that we said before, but I think, like, of the person who said, when Apple was getting into the phone game, there's some things you can't improve. Like, for example, there's no way to improve the keyboard on a BlackBerry. You know, it's like, and then it takes somebody like Apple coming along and saying, you improve the keyboard by getting rid of the keyboard, you know? And, like, there's some things about these cars we have that we think, there's no way to improve that.
It's different with a car, though. I mean, there's, like, regulations, and, like, cars probably legally have to have steering wheels. Like, there are some things, if you try to innovate too much, too quickly, I think you're in trouble. And electric cars are good, like, right now. Like, they are really, I think they're really improved. And, you know, I don't know. I think there's a lot of good work being done here. And I don't think Apple can have the same level up that they had going from a BlackBerry to an iPhone. I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
The car improvements are iterative. They happen slowly.
Okay. I'm putting all my chips on being surprised by Apple, maybe because that's what I want, and I don't care about losing all of my chips. But we'll let that rest. I guess we'll find out in 5 years whether you're on Twitter and whether Apple has a car.
Apple can't have a car because they're too busy filming reality TV shows. And if that's a transition for you, I will say that I just finished watching Planet of the Apes, Part 2, Episode 2. Have you watched any of this show yet?
Oh, hell no.
So one pet peeve I have is people who comment. We talked and speculated about the show. And we criticized it before we even saw it. And that's fine. But now that the show is out, I'm a little annoyed when people criticize it or judge it without seeing it. And there was a lot of that last week. There was this quote from one of the contestants about how he had to sacrifice, having time with his kids. And it was actually even a little worse on the show. He talked about, like, his family has to eat beans and rice, so that he can be a successful business owner. And I'm a little – but I'm annoyed with that, taking out of context. Like, if you're going to tweet – I saw some people with many thousands of followers tweet – this quote and judge it and criticize it without watching the show. Like, you watch the show and see it in context.
Some of them who might even be your co-host on this show.
I wasn't referring to you specifically, but Well, just because, like, so I, because I think I have a lot of opinions about the show, and I've seen the first two episodes now, so I feel like I am an expert on judging the show. But one thing I think they've been a little bit hesitant to, like, it's dramatized, that's obvious, but it could have been worse. Like, they could have made these characters, these contestants, they could have set out to make them even worse, more loved or more hated, and they didn't do that. So, like, this one individual, I can't remember his name now, I think he came off pretty well in the show. Like, it's not like, oh, I hate this guy. Like, can't believe he said, like, I feel like in context, it was fine. And if we had the raw, like, transcript of everything he said that was just edited down to just, like, 30-second soundbite, I think it probably would have come off even better. So just to, it's kind of a pet peeve. Like, we can criticize the show, but, like, yeah, I feel like, got to watch the show if you want to be able to really judge it, right?
I get what you're saying, but I just to defend myself a little bit, I did condemn that quotation from the show, but I condemned it. I thought I was trying to kind of condemn it from a point of view that my judgment was not of the show, but of the way the show was marketing itself, and that is revelatory of something. I did, you know me, I say things, but so I did say that Planet of the Apes was the Motorola rocker of Apple Media productions. But, that's sort of just a thought experiment. It's not a deep criticism of the show. And I think you're right, because I haven't seen the show, I can't give it a deep criticism. But it's kind of like I do think I can criticize the choice that the Apple Music marketing team made when deciding to highlight, and as you said, it conveyed it in a poor light, and so double whammy to them for first of all going after this kind of, like, gross, this gross, like, spin on the on the sacrifices that developers make to, that hurt their families. Like, this idea that to make it as a developer, you have to choose to neglect your family. And then the show's decision to sort of celebrate that as in, like, oh, these are real American heroes. They'll do anything to be big on the App Store. It's like, it's just stupid, right? So, like, criticism of that marketing choice, I think, stands without having watched the show.
Yeah, and they pulled that tweet or whatever, which I think was the right thing to do. And, when I was talking about I know you had tweeted it, and that's why I wanted to mention it. But I was also – I don't see why I'm not calling it out. Like, Jason Fried also made a big deal about it. And that's a constant narrative with 37 Signals and Basecamp. Like, don't work too much. You don't need to. And have a good work-life balance. So it makes perfect sense. But also, I know he didn't watch the show. And so that, I don't know, it's just a little pet peeve with me, and like before, it sounds like I'm completely defending the show. The show has a lot of problems. It has more problems than I thought it would have. It's super entertaining. I'm going to keep watching it, but it has a lot of problems. And one problem it has is that I thought when we first looked at it that it was a mix of Shark Tank and The Voice. And it still is partly that, but one thing it has is that there is no narrative across the whole season. Contestants, you know, app makers, entrepreneurs, they get one show, they're either off the show in the 60 seconds, or they take up half the show, right? Every show follows two people that were quote unquote successful, but that's it. And I really, I thought they were going to develop these narratives across the whole season. So you would be able to follow these characters kind of like you do on The Voice or American Idol or the British Baking Show or a lot of reality TV shows that have a long kind of arc. I thought you'd be able to follow these people as they improve their app and work with their mentor. That's not the case. And I think that's a big missed opportunity because the show is like 45 minutes or 44 or whatever it comes out to. You can only tell so much of someone's story in 15 or 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's true. And I agree. And it's weird. It kind of makes it attractive in a way because you can pick up the show at any time, it sounds like.
True.
And just enjoy it as an episode here or there. But that's a surprising choice. It seems to fly against the sort of formula for successful reality TV, right? Like it surprises me that they would make that choice for a new reality TV show, like without an obvious payback. Like there's not like an obvious payback for making that sacrifice. Like it seems to me like people watch reality shows so that they can get that multi-episode story arc. Mm-hmm. And to give that up, you should be getting something back in return that balances, you know, outweighs what you gave up.
Right. I think, and maybe it's just simplicity. Like maybe if it's moderately successful, they could do a season two and they could maybe go more in depth, but I think also it's an investment in time. Like for these developers and the panel of judges as well. Like I guess if here it's like a 6 week. Like if you're picked, you have 6 weeks to like improve your app and then pitch it to investors. And I guess if it was longer, maybe. Maybe you'd have to be stuck, on the show for months, possibly. I don't know what the reasoning is, but it's a really fascinating show. It's interesting that Apple did it. It has problems. I wish they had done it very differently, but there's still parts of it that are entertaining, and I'm going to at least watch a few more and see kind of where it goes.
Well, I'm not sold on on watching it. I guess I came into it with such a bias against it. That having that compounded by the really absurd marketing choice just made me kind of feel like, I got lots of things. I'm supposed to be making my next release of Mars Edit. I got, things to do with my life. I got home repair projects. I've got a long list of Netflix shows that are probably a lot better than Planet of the Apes. So I really sort of need something to compel me to watch it. And I think what compelled you to watch it is you appreciate just how unusually relevant to our life, our work and our career and our platform the show is. There's never been a show dedicated to iOS developers before.
Right.
And
that's still might not be it, but it's close.
But for me, I guess... I don't know. There's a little bit of that, feeling too, where it's like, if you read the news and there's a news article about something that you don't really know much about, it might be interesting. But if there's a news article about something you do know about, then it's like you just spend the whole time reading it going, God, this reporter is stupid. They don't know what they're talking about.
Right.
And I guess I'm a little bit worried that it'll just be... that it'll fall into that category. Like, I don't really want to go out and I don't really want to go read like a People magazine, not to pick on People, but just like their focus is not on iOS development. So if People magazine did like this is what it's all about being an iOS developer, I don't think I would be compelled to read it.
So now that just I think I had that concern too about how are they going to dumb down like using Xcode. Turns out this show has nothing to do with development. It's a business show. So there's absolutely nothing in the first two episodes so far that have anything to do with day-to-day coding. And it's all so, and like when they use terms that like the audience might not understand, they have this little pop-up bubble kind of thing at the bottom that explains it. All of those are business investment related, you know, like, you know, like what's a funnel in your business? What is some, you know, weird kind of investment strategy or valuation thing? Or, like, that's actually, there was a couple, the guy that was being picked on, there were a couple technical things related to augmented reality in him that they explained, but that's the exception. There's very little technical content in this that they could get wrong.
So there's no like long monologues about having to quit and delete derived data.
No, nothing. And so again, that's, you know, bottom line for me, it's a missed opportunity. The show could have been a lot better, could have gone into more depth, and really people could have learned something from the show. And I don't think that's going to happen. It's really Shark Tank for apps. That's what it is. It's, you know, it's good and bad that comes with that.
Well, you keep watching it, Manton, and you let us know if there's an episode that everybody absolutely must see, and then, okay. Then I'll watch it.
So, Daniel, as we wrap up the show, one more thing that is kind of in the news this week, and I think will continue to be something that's just fascinating to developers and iOS folks, is this new book that's coming out, The One Device, and I think the tagline is like Secret History of the iPhone or something like that. It sounds pretty interesting. People love these kind of books with behind the scenes, like what was this actually like? And so the author has a bunch of quotes and interviews related to developing the iPhone at Apple, people that worked on the project. But already, book's not out yet. There's an excerpt on The Verge. Already, controversy. People don't know exactly what to think of this yet, because some of the quotes seem a little chopped up and maybe taken out of context already, just in what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I first learned about, I've been traveling and I haven't had my ear directly to the, you know, the pulse of internet outrage. So I first heard about this seeing a Phil Schiller tweet. He was replying to somebody who lamented that Phil was apparently pushing, quote unquote, pushed for a physical keyboard on the iPhone. And that was sort of like said as if to say, Phil Schiller is such a dummy. He wanted to keep things the way they were with the old BlackBerry days, and he didn't have a vision for the future, da 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 da. And this was information gleaned from this excerpt of this book. And Phil Schiller just responds on Twitter and says, "Not true. Don't believe everything you read." And that does not sound like somebody who's pleased with the way that they have been portrayed in a highly cited, you know, highly anticipated book. And then I think I saw also Tony Fadell also had a tweet, I think, about
right. He was replying or quoting Phil's tweet, and he said, "Yeah, this." He basically said the same thing, like, "The story's not true. I've contacted the author to fix it," which is bizarre because that story in the book is quoted from Tony, like that's like his story, like that he told to the author. And so it was either again completely cut up and taken out of context and twisted to mean something else, or I don't know what. He told the story and he's backtracking, and he wasn't serious
or something. I mean, yeah,
maybe there's a middle ground there. Maybe he did tell some of the story, but it was put together in a way, in a light that didn't make sense or didn't actually fit the way the events happened.
Well, it seems to me it's lucky for this author of this book that this is an excerpt. If I were the author of this book, I'd be rethinking my whole approach to this book, because maybe you'll get like this sensational, at least from the feedback, you know, that's been observed so far, there's going to be, if this book is published, there is going to be public denial of the accuracy of the book by some of the key players, you know, cited in the book. And I don't know, I'm not an expert at writing books about technology, but it seems to me that that is not the kind of reaction you want. Maybe it'll sell a bunch of books for the controversy, but if you're an author who wants to write books like this for a living, don't you want the next book you write to have willing participants who are you know, trusting that you're not going to twist their words. It's like being a journalist in that respect. It's like, you know, if somebody has a reputation of twisting words, then, well, you just won't get an interview with the people that you sure. need to make a and, story. Well, so I could see this being kind of like a beta test well, of this book.
Unfortunately, the realizing. Book comes out in a week in hardcover.
Yeah, oh, does
so
it?
Like,
oh my gosh.
There's no going back to the drawing board on this. Like there's they no could issue back. An addendum no. or, you know, online revise the Kindle version or something. But like this book is done. I'd be surprised if they haven't already printed a bunch of copies of it, if it has a traditional publisher. Yep. So too late for that. You know, I'm thinking about after Steve Jobs died, the official biography. There was some similar pushback against that from Apple fans and, in fact, Apple and Steve Jobs' wife. And, like, there's a lot of people that were like, this isn't right. Like, they didn't capture it. Yeah. And same kind of thing is happening here. And I don't know how much of that is just because, like, yeah, this story's not quite right. Or also people's just defense of Apple at all costs. Like, oh, my gosh, Apple can defend themselves. We don't need to all... jump in on anything right. that's the least critical or that puts any executive in misleading light. But, you know, and then, so we had the Steve Jobs book. I bought it immediately, have yet to finish it. There was also Becoming Steve Jobs, which was, by all accounts, much more accurate or just interesting look at Steve. I have that one as well, have not read it. For some reason, even, you know, 4 or 5 years later, I've yet to just dive into these books about Steve. But it feels kind of like this book is in a similar vein. It's like it reveals things that we didn't know before. And so depending on how you feel, you may be kind of biased into like distrusting them or not.
Right. Well, I think that that Isaacson response that you alluded to, it really tarnished the book. I don't think yeah. that book is considered a great book. And maybe that didn't hurt its sales. Maybe it didn't hurt Isaacson's ability to go on and do other books. I think I've seen some other books that maybe at least another book he's done since then. Jeez, this is just,
yeah,
I don't know. It will be interesting to see how it plays out, especially when the whole book is out. If it's just like multiple of what the reaction right. has been so far, then, it'll be good for making hay, but maybe not a great history of the actual development process for the iPhone.
It's always a problem, I think, when you try to make the story more interesting than it actually is. Sometimes life is just kind of boring. Like, sometimes people aren't yelling in the hallway and Steve's kicking you out of the conference room.
Right.
Like, sometimes it's more mundane than that. And, and that's okay. Like, some of the best, like, books about something are not dramatized and made out to be more than they are. And it feels like this is happening with this. It feels like he did do a lot of research and interviews and he was onto something and he could reveal some interesting things about that process. But the way he edited together maybe missed the mark because it was trying to be more interesting. And sometimes life's just boring and that's okay. I want to know the boring stuff. I want a dry, mm-hmm. boring history of how the iPhone came to be. I don't need it to be elaborated.
Right. And you want to know, of course, anything that is legitimately right. like, you know, off the hook crazy that went on. But if you find out after reading it that it wasn't legitimately that way, then you just feel like, oh, I just, it's, you know, this is funny. This is kind of like a parallel now with the
yeah.
with the Planet of the Apps.
It's very similar, I think, in some ways.
Yeah. So we'll see if we decide after this book comes out to criticize it without reading it or not.
We've already too late now. We've already done it. I don't know if I'll pick this one up and read it. I might. I read most of the excerpt, and I am mm-hmm. fascinated with this period because it was a breakthrough for Apple and the tech industry. And, you know, the iPhone's insane. Like, there's never been a device yep. or a business that's been able to do what Apple has done in the last 10 years. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll pick it up.
Maybe it's just the best. It's a book about the best thing ever. So, maybe I'll read it.
All right.
Well, we'll have to keep our eyes on that, especially as you mentioned, the full book is coming out in a week. So, we'll soon know what, you know, maybe, for that matter, could be that the rest of the book just totally makes up for. Maybe there's some little mm-hmm. slip-ups here in the excerpt, but maybe the rest of the book is like not as not as exaggerated or not edited in misleading ways.
Yeah.
And maybe for that reason, it'll regain its stature.
Yeah, I think that very well could be. And the book, I noticed it's over 400 pages, so it's not a short book. It's like it feels like there's some real substance here. You can't write a 400 page book and have just like elaborate and like every little part and make it seem more than it is. There's got to be something real in here, so maybe
right,
it's worth checking out.
All right, well, Manton, we've made it through another slightly compromised hardware setup recording of the show. Seems like it went okay. Anything else you want to chat about before we wrap it up for the week?
No, that's good. Thanks, everyone, for listening. There's still a whole bunch about WWDC that we can and should follow up on. I've actually been posting my blog a lot about as I watch sessions and as I've been thinking about kind of the fallout from last week's conference. Kind of on a roll with posting to my blog. I'm going to continue to do that. But there's a lot of stuff I think we can follow up next week from WWDC.
Blogging, eh? That's something that's worth looking into.
Yeah. You should check it out. Maybe write an app that makes it easier or something.
Maybe I should make something in that market. Don't forget, folks, if you want to chat with us and many, many of the other astute, intelligent, thoughtful, friendly listeners to the show, you can join us at chat.coreint.org. And, of course, if you would like to get a job or hire somebody, we know a little place you should check out called jobs.coreint.org.
Great. Talk to you next week.